I'm Jonathan Goldstein, host of Wiretap. Each week you're invited to listen in on my telephone conversations, whether funny, sad, wistful, or even slightly strange. You never know just what you might hear on Wiretap.
I mean, I knew you had a show. I just didn't think that people actually listen to it.
Howard,
that's the breadth of your genius, Jonathan. It's not just that you're funny, but you can be cripplingly, poignantly depressing.
The Wiretap Archives, available on CBC Listen, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Well, I really can't see very much. I'm peering through these iron bars and I can see a house behind the trees and some kind of construction trailers. I'm just walking up to the gates now and I can see the number 24 etched into the stone gatepost. Oh yeah, and there's somebody sitting behind a security desk.
For months, there's been a flurry of activity here at 24 Sussex Drive. Workers have been removing asbestos and dead rodents from the walls, just a Band-Aid solution to prevent the place from crumbling further. 24 Sussex Drive has been the Prime Minister's official residence since the 1950s, their families moving in with election wins and moving out with the losses. But Canada's current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, doesn't live here because the house is in disrepair. And so far, no politician has been willing to make the decision to either fix it or tear it down.
Bulldoze the entire, all of 24 Sussex.
Oh, God.
Here we go. The whole thing.
Prime ministers have called this place home. It's also been called a rodent-infested death trap.
Oh, everyone's lived there.
Great.
The address is 24 Sussex Street, perched 7 feet above the broad waters of the Ottawa.
24 Sussex might never house a prime minister again.
I'm Jennifer Chevalier, and this is Storylines. This week, I'm taking you to 24 Sussex Drive to find out what's going on with Canada's most famous heritage home. Why has it become such a political football? And when will the decision finally be made about its future? I'm curious because, as it turns out, I have a surprising connection to its past.
It's an embarrassment that we can't find a solution to a safe residence for our head of government. It's a country of 40 million people, $2 trillion economy. The government of Canada spends about $420 billion a year. You would think we could manage to build a house for a family.
The Prime Minister's residence is a place worth saving. And the fact that the regular due diligence has not been done for 15 years, there's a reason that there are rats running through the place. If you left your place vacant for 15 years, you'd have rats running through it too.
These are the arguments that have been going round and round about 24 Sussex Drive for years. Save it or start fresh. The last resident was Prime Minister Stephen Harper. In 2015, when Justin Trudeau was elected, he and his family moved into another house nearby.
Here's the Trudeau's new home. It's called Rideau Cottage, a Victorian house in a private area on the grounds of Rideau Hall, home of the Governor General.
The National Capital Commission manages federal heritage buildings in the National Capital Region, including the official residences. In the last few months, it's been into 24 Sussex to remove asbestos, lead, and mold from the property, and it's stripped out the old electrical wiring and plumbing, too. Heat pumps are being installed in the empty home to keep it from freezing while a decision is made on its future. As for those rodents, well, they were mostly mice, and they're mostly gone. All this in a home that was described in 1867 in the Ottawa Citizen like this.
The style of the building is Gothic, and the design chaste and elegant. The mantelpieces are marble. The woodwork is of the best possible material and quality. The building is heated with hot air and furnished with hot and cold water baths. The cost will probably be...
Before it was the Prime Minister's residence, it was a family home belonging to the Edwards family.
So this is me. Put your coat here or there.
Thank you.
The Edwards family,
really,
well, that's actually my mother's family. Yeah, it turns out a long time ago, my great-great-uncle owned 24 Sussex Drive. Now, even if the house had stayed in the family, it's not like I would have ever lived there.
My grandfather's house.
But John Bogue, my third cousin once removed, he might have. John is in his 80s now, but he still remembers the last time he visited his grandfather, Gordon Edwards, at 24 Sussex.
I was six, and I was visiting my grandfather. I was staying there. I have a very distinct memory of what the house was like. When you walked into the foyer, you were facing a fireplace that at 6 years old, I could walk into and not hit my head on the mantle.
Right into the fireplace.
I remember certain things about 24 Sussex. I remember the parquet floor in the main entrance where it had this space under the stairs, which was the perfect hiding spot for someone my age. So I hid there a lot.
Catherine Clark also has childhood memories of 24 Sussex. She lived in the house for a short period when her father, Joe Clark, was prime minister.
There was a feeling that you had when you got to play hide and seek in a place like that. That was
so
great.
Where did you hide?
Right under the stairs. No adult's going to get in there, but a little kid sure can.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
We're looking at a book her mother, Maureen McTeer, wrote about Canada's official residences. And this is you.
It's me.
With your dad.
Yeah. Putting on my cowboy boots.
Clark made a documentary for CPAC, the cable public affairs channel, about 24 Sussex Drive. And I want to ask her about the history of the place, including the tragic story of the man who built it, the lumber baron Joseph Currier. Originally from Vermont, he came to Ottawa in the 1830s at the age of 17 and made a fortune in the lumber trade. But his life was marred by heartache. His first wife is said to have died of grief after three of their children died of scarlet fever. And his second wife also met a terrible end.
His beautiful young wife was killed in a tragic accident at the Manitic Mill. Her dress was caught in the turbines, and she was killed in front of an entire gathering of people who were there to see this new technology at the mill. And yeah, pretty awful.
Several years after that horrific accident, Currier eventually remarried and built 24 Sussex as a wedding gift to his third wife, Hannah Wright. It took 2 years to build, and the couple moved in 1868.
And after he passed away, she lived there until, I think, 1901. After Hannah passed away, it was sold, and the Edwards family purchased it. And they then, in turn, lived there for 40 years.
In the late 1940s, the government of Canada expropriated 24 Sussex from Gordon Edwards.
It was such an odd situation. So the history of the expropriation is that the Edwards family, your family, was living there and received a note from the government that the house was going to be expropriated. And I do know that the Edwards family were shocked when they received what amounted to an eviction notice from the government. And they certainly had no intention of moving. And the government was claiming that it was worth a certain amount. The Edwards family insisted that it was worth double, and I'm sure they were right. And it was fought fairly fiercely for a while. And the reason that was never quite fully explained was that a deputy minister felt that the area could be commercialized and or that a foreign government could come in and purchase up all the property, which was prime real estate. It was close to downtown. It had a beautiful view of the Ottawa River. The British and the French had already purchased parcels of land on which they had built significant residences. So this deputy minister clearly felt the house should simply be, and property should simply be expropriated so that it could be protected. They had no idea what they were going to do with it. And in the end, it was simply expropriated and for far less than the Edwards family had asked. And tragically, Mr. Edwards died literally, 6 or 7 months, I think, after the house, he was told he was being evicted from his home.
Wow. I mean, I can't believe they didn't have a purpose for it.
Yeah.
They just said, we need to have this place in case somebody builds a mall.
Yeah, and I think that it's a tragic story anyways because it's someone's home. But the other element is you can understand if there is a really clearly defined purpose behind it, but there was not. And the house was allowed to fall into disrepair. It was an unkempt lawn. Windows were broken. It looked derelict. And then they thought, okay, well, maybe we need a tenant. So I believe it was the Australians who then became, they used it as their high commission for a short period of time. And then someone came up with the idea of making it a permanent residence for the prime minister, which was not something that anyone had really ever talked about. There was no permanent residence for a prime minister at the time, and Louis Saint-Laurent, who became the first person to live in 24 Sussex as prime minister, had absolutely no interest in having a permanent residence. He was very happy living at the Roxborough Apartments. It was near Parliament Hill. He was surrounded by other members of Parliament and senators. He had to be convinced that this was something that he had to do. And he insisted on continuing to pay rent, which some Canadians may not know, but for about two decades afterwards, prime ministers paid rent to live at 24 Sussex.
Do you live here, Mr. Diefenbaker, rent-free?
For the use of the premises, a very considerable sum has to be paid each month.
You can see the front hall stairs, which is this beautiful, flowing, gorgeously curved stair that goes up, and it's open on the second floor. These are things that you want to preserve. Like, it would be just literally a crime to knock the thing down and lose those. So we wanted to maintain.
Mark Thompson Brandt is a conservation architect. He's showing me his drawings for a reimagined 24 Sussex and came up with the designs after the idea of ditching the house and building a whole new residence for the PM was first floated a few years ago. I asked him about the architectural history of the house.
Well, it was first built in 1866, just prior to Canada's Confederation. It was sort of a Gothic revival mansion. In 1906, there was a major renovation. And that renovation brought it more into the kind of Two Solitudes feeling of Canada. It's what we call the chateauesque style.
Chateauesque, like a castle. Brandt shows me two photos of the house, before and after the turn of the century reno. The original Gothic revival building is stone with a peaked roof, even a little spire. With the chateauesque renovations, there are some new elements.
What's this thing called here?
Porte cochère.
What's it called?
A porte cochère. It's like a front entry porch where you get off your carriage before you go into the entry, right? Or they help you off your carriage. And then in the 50s, right, post-war government bureaucrats decided we must make this more like Canadian prime ministerial. So they swept away a lot of the chateauesque projections that give it a lot of character. They flattened it out and they made it more austere. And it projected, it's still a very regal stone building, as befitting a prime minister, but it's not extravagant. It's not wasting Canadian taxpayer money.
In other words, money was spent to make the house look less fancy. Brandt clearly loves 24 Sussex in all its iterations over all the years. And he's frustrated that the beautiful old home has been left empty with no decision on its future.
Imagine the White House or 10 Downing Street sitting empty, rotting away like that for years. The fact of the matter is, as a proud Canadian, we should all want a nice place for our prime minister, something that is that we can all take pride in. It's not their home. They just lived there for a few years. It's our home. And it's an expression of our country. And we should want the best for something like our prime minister's residence.
We got to take a quick break. Storylines will be right back.
What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Michael Wernick. I was clerk of the Privy Council and Secretary of Cabinet from 2016 to 2019. And indeed, in 2016, we came very close to a cabinet decision on renovation of 24 Sussex. The matter was put to cabinet and cabinet decided not to proceed.
The Trudeau government came close to fixing it up. But according to Michael Wernick, the problem for any prime minister is politics.
A prime minister who approves money on the building is accused of pampering himself and living off taxpayers' funds. anytime there's been any money spent on any of the official residences, you get the sort of performance theater from whoever's in opposition of the day, from media, from some of the lobby groups. So, you know, we just go through the same cycle of dithering and indecision on whoever's in government and performance theater, whoever's in opposition. And, you know, you can read the tweets of, why are you building a mansion for the prime minister when so many Canadians have trouble buying a house? There's no political upside for going ahead with either a renovation or a new building. There's only pain to be had.
Former Heritage Minister Sheila Copps agrees with the problem being political. She admits she herself was guilty of piling on the pressure in her day.
I said to Mr. Mulroney when I was talking about 24 Sussex, I mean, I was in the opposition when his poor kids just wanted to have toilets that fixed because, you know, they had little children. And what they did was they changed the sinks. And anyway, of course, the government does it. It costs a lot of money. And we made a lot of hay out of that in the opposition. So I'm as guilty as anybody about attacking governments for spending.
There's only a short window when a prime minister can spend the money, according to Andrew McDougall. He was communications director for Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and he says his former boss never got a chance to act.
Obviously, early in a mandate, when you're fresh off a win and people are feeling good, is the best time to do it. So if you wind that back and look at when Stephen Harper was first elected in 2006, it was with the tiniest. I mean, it was a minority government. There was 125 MPs out of 308. So that's not the kind of time you want to go and spend money on things like renovating the house. You know, was there a moment in 2011? Perhaps. But then that was on the tail end of the global economic recession. And the mood at that time was to get, you know, the belt tightened again.
And McDougall can't see Justin Trudeau making the decision to renovate anytime soon.
You know, he's taking heat for going on private vacations to kind of wealthy beach resorts. The last thing he's going to want to do is to renovate the residence.
So what about Pierre Poilievre riding high in the polls? If he wins a majority government, what might he do?
Of my list of priorities, this will probably be the last.
Look, if he comes and smashes it and the current polling holds and he's got a huge majority, then I think the chances go up. If it shrinks, it doesn't take a genius to see that the chances go down. So we'll see. But having gone so hot on Man of the People, Housing Pain, he's certainly not going to put anything up in bright lights about it. It will be, I was forced to, or look, this is a decision we had to take in the national interest, because if we delay it like Trudeau delayed it for 8 years, we won't have a decision to make and we'll be out of a residence. And that does nobody any good.
Hmm. Why do you think it is that this seems to be such a problem for Canada? I don't think there are the same kinds of arguments over whether repairs need to be done to 10 Downing Street. Is there something particularly chintzy about us as a nation?
Yeah, I think that's the stereotype. But look, that 10 Downing Street was built in the 1700s. It has its issues. But prime ministers have taken the decision to upgrade the residence. You know, Margaret Thatcher famously put a kitchen in. Boris Johnson famously put some pretty fancy gold wallpaper up. So it's not just matters of taste and custom. They have built it to support modern government as well in terms of security upgrades and IT upgrades. But yeah, I think Canada has always been uncomfortable about that kind of spending and that kind of circumstance.
The big problem is the big price tag. The National Capital Commission says the government needs to spend $37 million in deferred maintenance costs. And then there's what McDougall just mentioned, security. Over the years, there have been a few close calls. In 1995, an armed man roamed the grounds of 24 Sussex. He then went inside the house, up the stairs, within steps of then-Prime Minister Jean Chrétien and his wife.
Alain Chrétien was the one who confronted the intruder and raised the alarm.
I think that I'm lucky that she was there.
The location is utterly terrible when you consider the current world climate with regards to public safety and security.
P.Y. Bourdois is the former deputy commissioner of the RCMP. He thinks no amount of technology can make 24 Sussex safe, and that's because of the location.
24 Sussex is too close to Sussex Drive and too close to the river. There needs to be a buffer zone around the residence to allow proper response if any threat would happen. So case in point here, July 2nd, 2021, when this individual drove from Manitoba to break to the gate of the Governor General's residence.
Police in droves. Rideau Hall's wrought iron gate smashed by a truck. Police say it was a soldier driving. A search
and armed with an assault rifle was trying to get to our Prime Minister's residence behind Rideau Hall.
According to the RCMP, the man breached the gate of Rideau Hall, the Governor General's official residence. Police say he then took off on foot, making his way all the way to the greenhouse. The Prime Minister's home at Rideau Cottage is just a few hundred meters away.
And the RCMP were able to intercept the individual because of this buffer zone that is around the Prime Minister's residence. So the RCMP were able to physically apprehend the individual before he could actually reach the residence of our Prime Minister.
But whether it's a brand new fortress or a renovation of 24 Sussex to make it secure, how much will all that cost?
When it comes to our Prime Minister's safety and security, there shouldn't be any cost consideration. It should be the best that money can buy.
And I remember discussing this with my former boss, Mr. Kretsch, and he said, well, of course, if you give it to the RCMP, they want state-of-the-art everything. They're going to want to take you to the moon.
Sheila Copps has been lobbying for the preservation of 24 Sussex on behalf of HODI. That's Heritage Ottawa Development Inc.
The reality is that the security numbers haven't actually been rolled out, and nor has there been a proper analysis. So it needs, obviously, upgrades and updates, but the figure quoted in the multiple millions is probably a little bit exaggerated because the security numbers that have been quoted are not real, and they haven't actually been proven.
The conservation architect, Mark Brandt, is the former president of HODI. I asked him, given the cost and these security risks, why Canada should bother with the crumbling old house?
First of all, the site is singular within the National Capital Region. It's basically at the confluence of the three rivers, the very raison d'etre for the capital at this place. That's a pretty good reason right there.
But you're talking about the location. But if this place is uninhabitable, why not tear it down and build a new one?
So when you build a stone structure, you're building for millennia. It's not the throwaway society. Yeah, there's some repairs needed, but our entire mindset about buildings has to change. Climate change is the reason. We cannot afford to build and then demolish and build new again. Now, we can avoid 40% of our carbon emissions of building a new one just by keeping the structure, like gutted down to the bare structure. And so we think that 24 Sussex is the place to demonstrate to all Canadians, both within the building sector and those who simply have an old house that needs to be upgraded, that, hey, if we can do it for 24 Sussex, you can do it too.
Regardless of whether the house remains the Prime Minister's official residence, it's still a storied part of our history. And according to some, Canada isn't doing a very good job of looking after our heritage properties. So I've come to meet Patricia Kell, the Executive Director of the National Trust for Canada.
Patricia, hi, I'm Jennifer.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having me here. This is a beautiful house.
Thank you. We're really delighted to be able to have our headquarters in such a fantastic heritage building.
I mean, there's got this gorgeous staircase.
The National Trust is located in a Queen Anne Revival style house.
On the walls, we have intricate paneling on the ceilings, and all of this is set off with some beautiful leaded glass windows and stained glass windows.
Guess what? It was also built by a lumber baron as a wedding gift for his wife, just like 24 Sussex.
And the building was designed to be a showcase of wood.
The National Charity's mission is to save historic places across the country.
Canada's record is not great. There's a growing history of the Auditor General looking at the federal government record on care of heritage places, which is critical. In 2017, the Standing Committee on the Environment did a study about heritage places in Canada and also made a number of recommendations that are aimed at encouraging the government to do a better job of looking after places that even itself has deemed to be important places. And so 24 Sussex isn't unique. There are other places that have languished, some of them also for decades. I think about Carlton Martello Tower, which is in New Brunswick. And there are vanishingly few Martello Towers in Canada. So a really exceptional building type, interesting history, which comes right up into the 20th century and the use during the Second World War. That building has had a very difficult time attracting the investment that's required in order to even stabilize it to the point where we're sure it's not going to fall down.
Kel is hoping that new legislation could make a difference. The proposed Historic Places Act would create legal obligations that would nudge federal departments that look after old buildings to keep on top of maintenance, for instance.
Canada is the only G7 nation that does not have federal legislation governing the way that its heritage, federal heritage properties are maintained. And so this would move us into a modern kind of state with respect to the care of heritage places.
So how does Canada get out of the legislative and political stalemate and move forward with a decision, any decision? Sheila Copps has been working on a cross-partisan push.
I had reached out to Ed Broadbent, and he was actually willing to write a letter, but he wanted comfort with other leaders, so I had reached out to Mr. Chrétien. I'd actually reached out through a conservative to a couple of the conservative prime ministers. I was in touch with Mr. Mulroney, actually. And so we were looking at trying to do something collectively to sort of take the political sting out of it, so it's not just one party.
And regardless if that cross-party appeal works, she wants it out of the hands of politicians altogether.
The thing should be taken out of the prime minister's office and given to a foundation run by the NCC or somebody like the Official Residences Act, where the prime minister's not the one signing the checks on the upkeep, because it's just an impossible situation to be in.
Over time, there's physical degradation. And the longer you leave something and let it deteriorate, the higher the cost will be to fix it up. So the cheapest maintenance is annual maintenance.
So Mark Thompson Brandt says it's time to do the maintenance. And former director of communications for Stephen Harper, Andrew McDougall, agrees.
I would say to spend the money. You don't get credit for not spending the money, but you do get blame if the residence falls apart under your watch. And I think this is one where the loudest voices in the room aren't the right ones. I think the vast majority of Canadians want to have pride in the residence. They want to see an official residence that isn't rat-infested fire trap, which is what 24 Sussex is, sadly, now become. And it just takes a leader with a bit of confidence to go, look, we are a G7 country. We don't keep things together with Bondo and hockey tape, right? We should be able to have something that looks good and serves the purpose that we need it to serve.
The office of the minister responsible for the file said any decision on the future of 24 Sussex won't be taken lightly and will balance security, historic preservation, and sustainability. But they didn't say when it will happen.
Well, I just knew it was my grandfather's house, and it was, you know, pretty...
Back in my cousin John Bogue's house, he still got his memories of when his grandfather lived in 24 Sussex Drive.
These chairs were from Sussex Street.
Those chairs are from 24 Sussex?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. And there's a picture somewhere of my taking my first step, and I'm holding onto one of those chairs for support. They expropriated it when my grandfather was living there. You know, it makes you wonder why the government spent whatever they did only to leave it basically vacant.
So given the politics of it all, if no decision is made, I mean, does that open up room for the previous owners to get it back? Do you think the Edwards should move back in?
I don't think we can afford it now.
That's all for Storylines this week. A short version of this documentary originally aired on The House. Today's episode was produced by me, Jennifer Chevalier, and edited by Storylines producer AC Rowe. The show is part of the CBC Audio Doc Unit. If you like the show and care about Canadian documentaries, the best way to show it is to leave us 5 stars and a glowing review. Better still, tell a friend about us. Join us next time. From me, for now. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.